Hey, what's going on? I hope you're having a good week as always. So I've got an awesome episode for you this week. I think my favorite thing about this show is getting to meet and chat to the absolute smartest people in the room, people who've been working with these immersive technologies and building things for years, and today is definitely no exception. Sol Rogers is the Global Director of Innovation at Magnopus, who, as you'll hear in the show, are Hollywood's best kept secret. They are the people that Warner Brothers, Paramount, Disney, Pixar, Universal, Amazon Studios, and more all call when they need a technology solution that has never been done before. Just glancing through their site, which I'll link, they've done everything from virtual production for The Lion King to real-time environment build-outs for Westworld, an immersive concert for Madison Beer, a Blade Runner VR experience, the Dubai Expo cross-reality experience. The list is absurdly impressive. Now, in this space, a lot of people on Twitter talk about it, but not everybody has had the experience to back up and has the foresight to really understand where we're going and also be able to explain it all simply in a way that people can understand. But that is exactly what Sol did brilliantly in this episode, so I massively enjoyed this one. It's a really practical episode as well, so very valuable. There's lots in here, and as I say, Sol explained things brilliant, so thank you very much to him for coming on. We also talk about their Connected Spaces platform too, which is solving a huge problem if you're building in this space. I'll leave all the details you need below. I definitely encourage you to follow this team. They are doing awesome work. But that is enough of an intro from me. So let's get into it. Sol, great to have you on the show. Thank you very much for doing this.
My absolute pleasure. Nice to be here.
Good stuff. All right. So you are a perfect company for a chat about the future of this space and the immersive technologies that we are rapidly moving towards. So this is going to be good. I love this description of your company. Magnopus is one of Hollywood's best kept secrets. They are the guys that everybody calls Warner Brothers, Paramount, Disney, Pixar, Universal, Amazon Studios when they need a technology solution for something that's never been done before. That's a pretty cool description. Maybe you could just add to that a little bit, tell us what Magnopus do and sort of a bit of the vision for the company as well. What are you all about?
Yeah, sure thing. real pleasure to be here. Thanks for letting me be on the show. So Magnopus, we've been around for 10 years. We're pretty proud about the track record of the work we've done. We tried to leave the film and entertainment industry behind. So our two founders are Oscar winners in the visual effects industry. And as we kept trying to leave, it keeps trying to drag us back in. And what we found is actually that our key use is in those hard challenges that most other studios can't seem to take on, things that have never been done before. And that leads us into basically enabling storytellers to tell their stories in new ways, in traditional mediums, or in new mediums in new ways. And so within the film industry, we helped Jon Favreau and his team do all of the virtual production for The Lion King, which involved making a multiplayer game called The Lion King Movie, and put everyone in VR headsets playing the game, standing on Pride Rock, shooting this film, which was then finished out for everyone to see, which basically enabling traditional filmmakers to trade new movies in new ways. That bled onto kind of some of the virtual production tools that went into Mandalorian, and then has bled us onto working with Disney, where we're actually bringing that same content, but now into your world. So your TV explodes with augmented reality at different parts in the movie. So it inhabits the world around you. And so within that traditional filmmaking, it's kind of exciting to be those, you know, the Swiss Army knife, the one they call when you need it. And then the other end of it, we've been doing really big virtual reality projects. So we created Mission ISS, we did Pixar's Coco, we've done a few other big titles, which are really exploring that new medium. You know, we all believe VR is the most immersive way to make you feel like you're somewhere else and feel, you know, be immersed in another world. But what's happened is that you end up with this high technology, you know, incredibly high immersion level. And then you've got the other end, which is completely passive in 2D. What you found in the middle is the cross reality stuff. And that's really where we're most excited. So augmented reality that inhabits your world either through your device or through the glasses you're going to wear. And so for 3 years, we did that at scale for the last World Expo. So the Dubai Expo 2020, where we created not only the virtual version for anyone in the world to visit, but a digital layer to that 4 square kilometers of city where we had dragons flying around, we had quests you could go on, you can meet avatars from anywhere in the world, showing that layering of reality on top of each other. And that's really where our sweet spot is, where we're super excited to play.
Yeah, that's awesome. There's so much cool stuff in there, and you are at the forefront of all of this. You mentioned a load of amazing projects that you worked on there. Maybe we could go a little bit deeper with just one of them, which perhaps you'd like to choose, because each of the things that you do uses a different set of kind of immersive technologies, whether it is purely virtual reality, or it's mixed reality, or it's something else. Maybe you could go a little bit deeper and just explain, walk us through maybe one of them, and give us a sense of kind of what's involved when you take on a production to sort of do something brand new like this.
Yeah, absolutely. So this the number one thing we try and work out is, who's this for? Like, what is the audience for this? And what's going to make their life better? And better could be betterly entertained. It could be ability to see in a new way. It could be using a new tool in something different. But it's all the same design thinking that come down to it. And I think a lot of people forget that all the tools we have in front of us are just tools. They're not anything special. They're just a new paintbrush to tell a story in a new way. So we try and get past all that really quickly and go, like, what's the audience? Where are they? What's going to entertain them or make their life better? So case in point, when we were working with Pixar a few years ago, they had Coco, this incredible movie that they were bringing out, and they wondered what would it be like if you could step into that world and into that universe and be part of it. And the direct route is, let's make a game. Let's make a VR game, a copy of this world that will allow you to, whatever the story is. And a lot of people go from one IP in the movie industry and say, let's make a game of it. In VR, we realize the real power, and what we all are realizing now, is that obviously games are exciting, but really just inhabiting it with another human creates your own realities, your own stories, makes your own memories. And so we lent into that quite heavily. Created a world, had some, you know, games and mini games and experiences you can play along with it. But we said, four people go in together, when four people tell their own story and explore the world together, making their own memories and making their own real connections. And that really resonated with Pixar, being something different, something interesting. Obviously, the magical, beautiful art style of the world they're created, but it was the interplay between the four of us playing together that came at the end of it with memories that will last a lifetime.
That's so interesting. Yeah, it's, I think you're so right that we can, I know for myself, sometimes you can get obsessed with the technology first, and it's always important to come back to, who is this for and how can you use it, rather than it's just cool in its own right. But yeah, that's really interesting for sure. And obviously, your company, who've been working with these technologies, I think for a decade plus, you've got this amazing track record of the biggest kind of entertainment brands and companies in the world. For a lot of people, this new world is quite confusing because it's kind of being built in real time, and you've got terms like metaverse, obviously, and then also Web3 and AR and VR and XR, and then various devices, mobile, PC, console, headsets, and now spatial computing devices, and also AI is involved in many ways across all of that now as well. So understandably for people, this can get confusing. But how are you looking at the sort of future of all of these technologies coming together, I guess, from an entertainment lens? And you've mentioned some good examples, but what's your kind of sort of overview of where we're heading for people?
I think all the acronyms and all the technologies are just confusing. You know, we were a VR company, then an AR company, then an XR company, then an AR company, then an metaverse. Like, but that's just some labeling that people want to kind of stamp over the top. You see this happen with all the government industries as well. So we have manufacturing, and we now have advanced manufacturing. And advanced manufacturing is very special because it's advanced, where it's just manufacturing with some robots. And we have production, but now we have virtual production. Wait a minute, isn't that just production? Oh no, it's virtual, it's special, it's secretive, it's, you know, it's the new stuff. So we always need to label the new stuff, partly for the hype cycle, partly to get some interest, partly to allow us to play in that new space. But when it comes down to it, as we were talking about a minute ago, it's really about storytelling and whatever the tool and the technology you need to kind of pull that together. And all of the technologies that are rounding around us is like the greatest time to be a content creator that has ever been, because you can create in any medium. You can be a radio presenter, a podcast, a movie director, a game producer, an AR, things that we haven't really got words for. It's an immersive theater-based AR experience where you run around in a forest and a zombie, like whatever. But really what you're saying is we've got these incredible ways to tell stories and experience things in new ways. I think the term metaverse is a great wrapper for all of these technologies that are coming together. But it is not just avatar-led 3D first-person shooters, or, you know, conferences that happen as an avatar in front of some stadium. That stuff is there, but one of the way I broke it down for a friend of mine recently, I was like, if we just said advanced internet, I think that might be simpler for most humans to grab onto. You've got the internet, It's the advanced one. Okay, it's those things, but all better, faster 3D experience, 5G connected, AI driven. But like, that's really what we're taking. All that human connection and all that layers of technology is just going to let us communicate better, faster, cheaper, and in new ways. Metaverse branded over the top could be a way of thinking it. Everyone's kind of wrestled with it and they've pulled it apart into something different kind of tech companies grabbing onto it. So I think there's a bit of a challenge there around that. But for me, we try and get rid of those acronyms as quickly as possible. Obviously, clients come to us and studios come, I want to make a generative AI movie. Cool. Okay. Why? Who's it for? Well, it could be cheaper. Yeah, that could be a way of doing it. Does it make it better? Are your audience going to watch it? See it? They're going to pay for it? Who's going to like get past the tech and get to the why as quickly as possible?
Yeah, that's really well said for sure. I think that's at the crux of it all, really. And also, like, a lot of these technologies have actually been around for a long time in various sort of early adopter forms. Whenever you're working in this space, like, I guess it always feels like that sort of mainstream moment is around the corner because we're so kind of immersed in it all, for use of a better word that gets used a lot. But do you think we are getting to the point where this technology is really going to make an impact on everyday people's lives? And in what way, entertainment definitely being part of that, but with kind of the Apple Vision Pro, and it does feel like, okay, and I notice it with my friends who aren't in this space, but are beginning to sort of pick up headsets and you're seeing it just in general pop culture that you're seeing these devices, get used more. So do you think we're approaching that from the work that you're doing, that it's becoming mainstream slowly?
Yeah, I think it is. I think there's always a, what does mainstream mean? And everyone's trying to measure that number. Is it 10 million users, 100 million users, a billion users? Like, how big is your audience before you consider it mainstream? Or what profitability connected to this market? And a lot of people are trying to wrestle with that kind of dynamic. Is it as big as this? If so, could we create content in that space? I kind of get to a different place in it. I think usefulness or making people's lives better is a really good way of figuring it out. So in the enterprise space, VR for training is incredibly mainstream. It's become impactful, it's become useful, it's become better, and people are buying tens of thousands of headsets to give to their teams to educate them on all kinds of interesting stuff. So in the enterprise space, we're getting lots of good use cases where people are like, yes, VR is mainstream within this industry to do this one thing. Within the entertainment space, we're always weighing up the VR industry or the AR industry against Netflix. And so the numbers just like, well, that's not mainstream. Well, it's just a different use case and a different number again connected against it. And so for us, you've got to kind of field that point through. For me, I think the breakwater point is super close. I say that just because we're getting past the technology being the driver and we're getting into the apps and games and experiences being the driver. I've said this a few times, but I bought an Xbox to play Halo. I didn't buy the Xbox to play anything else. I did not care. I just wanted to play Halo. So it was worth $300 for the device and $50 for Halo. That was valuable enough for me to want to buy the hardware to do the thing. And we're getting close to that with some of the titles coming in VR and some of the ones that are going to come in mixed reality. So when they released Darth Vader the Immortal, huge number of people came in. I was like, yeah, I want a lightsaber. I want to battle Darth Vader. That is worth the hardware purchase alongside it. But I think the one that's coming, Vision Pro, $3,500, very expensive device. It's basically a development kit under a different guise. Some of the Focus 3s and what the Quest 3 are doing are all kind of getting the price point. And the unlock, we've seen little glimpses of it, is basically virtual FaceTime. If you think, I bought an iPad for my grandfather so that he can see my twin children. He doesn't push any other buttons, just the FaceTime button. And we have this portal to each other. So all the other things that it does with LiDAR scanners, blah, 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 does not matter. It was that killer use case. And I think we're going to find some incredible killer use cases, not only in virtual reality, which is great, but I think the extended reality part, that pass-through camera technology, that adding into our world, once that app comes out or those multiple apps comes out, you know, virtual FaceTime might be it, but for whatever the other ones, people are like, yes, I must have one of those devices to do this incredible thing that adds into my life.
Mm. Yeah, that is obviously exactly right, that people buy devices for the content or the killer thing. I forget what it was with Netflix. I'm sure there was loads of things before Stranger Things, but I remember that being a moment where a lot of people signed up because that kind of went super viral. Squid Game was another one that, and you have these kind of amazing pieces.
I must subscribe to watch that.
Right, exactly. Yeah, so yeah, that's important to think about for sure. I wanted to ask as well on the sort of devices thing, and you mentioned the sort of mixed reality thing, which especially with the Quest 3, they are really pushing that. And I kind of think that maybe there's a lot of adoption to be had there because it asks less of a traditional consumer to step fully out of their physical reality. VR is amazing. I love VR, but you do go from kind of zero to a million in the fact that you're in your physical location and suddenly you're sort of blindfolded and in a world that's amazing, but kind of can be a lot for a newcomer, especially if you're not kind of native with video games and that type of thing. Do you see a big adoption wave coming with the sort of mixed reality side of stuff where you can exist in your physical space as well? I'd be interested just to know your thoughts on that.
Absolutely. And personally, and I've said this for many years on stages big and small, I think the mixed reality is the future of humanity. I think our ability to, you know, adapt our vision, our presence, our reality in real time with anything over the top is basically making us all magicians and wizards to allow us to live in any format of reality, being adding digital artifacts or art into our house to replace our television with a virtual television, which is kind of Apple's push, through to digital dragons or living on the top of a mountain or whatever you want to add into it. The kind of the sky's the limit. What we're going to end up with is those with the devices almost becoming a different species. Like they are living in an alternative reality and another universe is wrapped around us. And I think it's that big a change, which is why so many studios and companies around the world are looking at it as going, it's not if it happens, it's when it happens. And are we ready for the glasses that are this big that do that all the time? Because people wearing it will literally be connected on a different level that no one's ever seen before. So I think that extended reality, the mixed reality, the past and content, once you've tried the Quest 3, or once you've tried the Vision Pro, or once you've tried any of these devices which are doing it at a high level, you begin to go, oh, it doesn't have to be everything. It can just be one singular thing within your world. And with the Apple stuff, I thought it was wonderful the way that it just placed it as your reality is great. We're just going to make it better. And that's all we're going to do with this device. And their first leaning is, hey, look, we can put 2D screens everywhere, which are really high fidelity. If you look at their keynote, they did this 45 minutes of showing all the physical hardware that they're going to bring to the world. And then in the back end, they showed you a device that will replace all of those over the next 5 to 10 years. There is no need for a physical laptop or a physical studio or a physical desktop screen because your headset will place as many of those as wherever you want, just streamed from somewhere in the cloud, let alone your phone or your hand or anything else. So I think it's really interesting that kind of placement, that use case where mixed reality will take us next.
Yeah, that's very interesting. And Mark Zuckerberg said a similar thing recently with the Lex Fridman interview with the Codec avatars that we talked about on the show previously, about how many physical things do you really need in a space if you can, like you say, replace screens, for example, is the obvious one where you don't need loads of physical things on your wall if you can kind of augment that. So yeah, that starts opening up some really interesting questions. I want to talk about, go a little bit deeper about how we kind of bring these technologies together and talk about something pretty awesome that you've created at Magnopus, the Connected Spaces platform, because one of the biggest challenges with all this stuff is to make it kind of seamlessly come together, allow people to develop on it in a way that really makes sense. And you've created this platform, which I'll let you explain because you'll be able to do it far better than me, but you've also open sourced it, which is really, really cool. It won, or it was included in Time's Best Inventions of 2022, that list. So congrats on that. But maybe in simple terms, you could just talk us through what the Connected Spaces platform is and kind of what problems it's solving.
Sure. So the Connected Spaces platform was solving a need that we had as a studio again and again and again, which was we just wanted to get to the content. What does this do for users? And to get to the content, whatever we were working with, required us to stand up 20 Unity engineers or 15 Unreal engineers and develop an app and deploy an app, go through QA, get it onto stores, get people to download it. Before we could even get to the content, we had to do all of that infrastructure. And through the project with the Dubai Expo, where we realized not only we were building a virtual world, which was going to live on mobile devices, in browsers, on desktops, in headsets, but we were also deploying an extended reality to the physical location, you know, geolocated AR content. There was no technology that could do all of that in sync. And so we developed out all of the infrastructure, the cloud services, to do that level of work. And as we were beginning to deploy it, we're going, well, this is really useful for us, but there isn't anyone doing that. At the moment, if you wanted to do a virtual concert, maybe you deploy into Roblox, maybe you put it into Fortnite. If you wanted to do AR, you know, in the real world, maybe you'll pick up Niantic's platform. There's a few others around there, but all of them still require a heavy lift for, you know, digital content creators and studios. So our CSP platform is that interoperable layer that allows you to pick and choose where your audiences are and how you want to engage them. And then it's up to you to put the content into that blank space. So it could be as simple as, I'd like to deploy in the park across the road from my house a giant Pokemon character or a giant dragon that you can go and fight on Sunday afternoon. You can all come together and just play that one thing. And you and I could just create that. Download CSP, I could open up a new world, I can 3D scan the space, which drops a cloud anchor, and then I pull a 3D asset from Sketchfab or anywhere else in the world, and I can make that mini game almost like user-generated content. But the other end of it, we've got plugins for Unreal Engine and Unity that feed that same world. So once you have a space, be it blank or be it a scan of a music venue or museum or a sporting stadium, then the content can be pushed there from people that are traditional developers, but not in the way of having to stand up a whole team to create that content. So we had 190 architectural firms supplying us their pavilions for the Dubai Expo. We had over 700 interactive mini games to create in that. Once we created the infrastructure, we could just, you know, plug and play from either architectural CAD or Unreal Engine or from Unity, from a game designer, from yourself, to build that world up really quickly. And so CSP is the culmination of all that thinking come together. And the most powerful thing is that the front ends are wherever your audience may be. You could say, this is just a browser-based experience. Go to www.whateverthehellyoulike.com, choose your avatar, and you're in this world in a browser. Not pixel streamed, costing loads of money, but just literally there. And as many avatars as you want, coming to a digital concert, playing a virtual game, visiting in the studio for a podcast, but it could also live in AR, perfectly located in a digital twin. It could live for virtual reality where that audience may be, or it could live in mixed reality. You just choose the front ends of where your audiences want to engage with it. And that was the unique thing we realized we picked up. And as we were getting closer to, you know, major launches, we realized that the community needed to be able to grab hold of the code base itself. So about 3 or 4 months ago, we took the decision to open source the platform. So about 70-80% of it is now out there. All of the front ends are there. Feel free to go to magnopus.com, sign up, grab yourself a copy, get a copy of the GitHub, and you can be away creating your own connected spaces in whatever platform you like.
Yeah, that's amazing, really, because it's part of the biggest problem that needs to be solved. And I really want to properly dive in and experiment as best as my ability to play with it, because that's pretty amazing. And I mean, this might be going too technical and my knowledge on that front is a little limited, but there's always the problem of different game engines with different rendered assets at different sort of levels of complexity, different polygons and all those things that make it difficult to bring all that stuff together, because there's so many sort of technical things that don't overlap there. So is there a way to simply explain how you're able to kind of combine all these things in one place? Or is that a misunderstanding from me? I might need educating too.
You seem technical enough. I'm sure you'll be fine. And the reality is that, you know, the web front end for CSP is a simplified 3D editor. You can upload in assets, you can retext them, you can do basic interactivity, you can do lighting, you can 3D scan with your phone in whatever format you want to throw it into the space. So it's really accessible. Basically, if you could use Keynote or PowerPoint, you can run and create your own 3D spaces really quickly. But you're right, feeding it from 3D engines, proper modeling, wherever else you want to create that content. Our interop is the real unlock. So we are constantly feeding those from Unreal Engine or Unity or the web platform or wherever into this layer, which does all the hard heavy lifting for you. Partly it's passing all the programming. Not everything can go. You know, some of those engines have some crazy tech. So we have to be a little bit wary that everything passes through, but basically most simple interactive experiences progress almost perfectly. That gets all converted into proprietary technology and then comes out and usually a JavaScript version for the front end, depending on where it ends up. And then the 3D assets go through the same thing. They come up and you can flag them to be basically untouched. Just leave it as is, please. Or you can, you know, if the flag is untouched, we actually create, you know, 5 levels of detail of that asset. We retexture it with levels of detail as well. And we pass it into a format that can then be read by any device where it comes from. And it all just seamlessly happens in the cloud for us, which means if you want to have it running on grandma's crappy laptop, it works. If you wanted to have it on the most powerful PC, it works too. And you get all the unlimited lighting and anything else you might want off the back of it. So it's really trying to do as much of the heavy lifting automatically without us having to rethink it every single time. And that's really been a really powerful unlock for some of the teams we're working with. If you've ever worked in the 3D industry, you're always given CAD models of, you know, buildings or cars, and they're just horrendous, coming like a billion polygons, which is never going to run anywhere. But our system will take that, strip it down, retopologize it, drop it back out as a reasonable model. And, you know, 50, 60% of the time, that's good enough. Sometimes for the asset, the client, no, it's got to be hand done. It's got to have that time and effort put into it. But we're really excited about how that kind of automatic interop between all the different front ends or wherever your audience may be is kind of handled by us. And that's the real unlock. CSP itself, because it's on GitHub at the moment, is open source. If you want to feed it from another program, if you wanted to build a Blender plugin or something proprietary that you're already using, that can be built as well. And then if you want to build a different front end, so you'd like to deploy this into another 3D environment that you're really, you know, really in love with, or it works within your enterprise model, then you can also build very simply a front end too. So you can just use the interop layer to feed in and out to go to your systems that you're already working with. And that was the why it had to be open source. We realized that there were so many places where people want to use the tool. And by just confining it to like Unity and Unreal are the only things that ever exist. And web and, you know, deployed as a native Android app is the only place it's ever going to exist. We're just going to start building the same enterprise software stack that you're kind of seeing in different verticals again and again and again.
Yeah, that's so awesome. I can feel my priorities for the rest of the day slipping as I go and play with it and see what we can do. But yeah, definitely encourage people to go and check that out for sure. And obviously that what you can do with that is completely limited only really by your creativity. But you mentioned the kind of, you know, creating a sort of a geo-located, maybe augmented game, Pokemon-style game in your local park or something like that. I mean, that world is so cool. Like, I'm so excited about being able to go out and bring Pokemon Go style adventures to real life. But what other things have people started creating with it? Or in your mind, what would you kind of love to see as some really kind of out there possible experiences, which is probably a big question to answer?
Yeah, it depends what you love and what you want to create. Is there a passion project? We've all got something we want to create. And I think the tool allows us to play in that space without the heavy cost and burden of studio. The one I'm most excited about is something that we're very good at doing. You know, all of the user experiences in our real world, every town, every city, every village, everyone has a place or a museum or a bar or a club or a, you know, even a piece of old architecture, a Roman ruin, which is only accessible by people that can physically go there. But we can now, through CSP, give digital reach to physical locations. So that thing that feels very niche to us, that is just ours, whatever that place may be. So the Roman ruin, I live near a town called St. Albans. There's a couple of thousand-year-old Roman ruins lying all over the place. People travel literally halfway around the world to see them, but only if they can afford to come halfway around the world. And only if they're comfortable with their climate impact. But with CSP, we can scan that, deploy it as a space, and then anyone in the world with just access to the internet can come and visit it and feel present, but also present and social with other people. So we're seeing people stand up these spaces where they'll bring their granddad and their grandma from halfway around the world for a digital visit to this physical location. They'll be there physically, and then they'll see their grandma and granddad walking around as avatars, and they're like, let's go for a walk in the park and see this thing, or let's go to this museum together, or let's go to this concert. So that digital reach, which we're very comfortable with in the digital space, you make a website, you make a piece of video content, you stick it onto YouTube, anyone in the world could see it, in quotes. But when it comes to physical stuff, we don't really have that yet. And I think that CSP is an unlock. And that's within the, you know, whatever the story you want to tell is. The other thing is that we can now make things that we consider very niche still be a business that you could run. So I'm a local band, and when I do my gigs in the pub, 50 people might turn up, and that's about it. But I've got about 200,000 people globally that love the music that I create, but they're all over the world. If I could run a digital concert where people turn up as avatars, they feel social as with each other. Some are in VR, some are in browser, some are in AR if they want to be. And I say, I'd like to charge you a $5 ticket, please, to come and see this, or a $10 ticket. You can put gigs on. You can bring a niche community together, a fan base that really cares about something, and put them in a space that makes them feel present with a community, perform something, and also generate a little bit of revenue so that you could do the thing you love more often. At the minute, there really isn't a way of doing that at scale easily. You're either inside and at someone else's framework and you've got to sell hats to maybe get some money from it, or maybe you get the user-generated content, or maybe you get some advertising. But we've built on the front end of CSP is, and in fact, it's launched a few days ago, there's a full ticketing system. So you can generate real revenue by saying, I'd like people to pay for entry to this space. And you choose how much you want to charge people. $1, $5, $10, $100. But it's really about how much will people pay for whatever the experience is. And that's only you will know because it's your audience. So we've allowed that to be a thing where we can generate real revenue. We can make experiences work so people can do the thing they love more often and get to their audiences in Australia, in Venezuela, in North America, in London, or wherever they might be.
Yeah, that's so cool. It's a big unlock for sure, isn't it? And it kind of begun to answer my next question, which I always like to try and get some sort of practical advice for whether it's businesses or individuals who have spotted these trends that we've talked about, know there's a shift coming and there's opportunities there, but sometimes it's quite hard to pinpoint exactly what to do. And I always think with a new technological shift, I mean, I witnessed it from having a traditional TV background, and then when YouTube came and it was disruptive but kind of weird and a bit clunky at the beginning sometimes, there's still people who rose up because they got on the technology first. They often weren't even the best, in inverted commas, people, you know, making the best content necessarily, but they were there first. They were able to kind of showcase stuff and be there as the eyes kind of came towards them. So it feels like another moment here where we're moving into a world of opportunity, but sometimes it's not obviously clear. You talked through a few really good examples there. Are there any other ways, or do you have any practical advice for people who are like, I can see what's happening. What do I do here? How do I kind of capitalize on this?
I guess it's kind of there's two ways of thinking about it. First of all, this technology is not going to replace anything else we already have going on. So it's not, you know, the classic thing of like radio replaced books, movies replaced radio, TV, blah, blah, blah. They never did. It was another medium. And so all of the technology we're talking about is not going to replace what you've got currently going on. It just gives it's another place for people to communicate, engage, be entertained, and anything else. So you got to make sure that it's not in quotes a gold rush. Everyone runs it. Or it's like not the burning platform where my whole world is going to fail overnight. So if you think about that, that's a new place to play. Then you got to look at the two things. Like, first of all, let's look at the enterprise communication. And I want to say enterprise. I don't think anyone really still considers that enterprise are different humans. Like, we're still the same humans at work and at home. So entertainment and game design is exactly the same for logistics companies as it is for games companies. Like, we're still trying to do a user loop, we're trying to do engagement, we're trying to make it entertaining, we're trying to communicate something. Like, it's all game design, in my opinion. So when we look at that, there was this thing back in the late 90s called digital transformation, and the UK government told every business they had to have a digital transformation strategy. And what that most meant for most people was like email. Like, that was really what it came down to, like the digitization of office. And I think there's the same thinking about the metaverse or the advanced internet or whatever we can finally settle down and think about. But really, is let's look at all the new technologies that are coming to bear and look at what we currently do and just think about how will this impact us. First of all, how will it impact what we currently do, and what are the, you know, the threats there? And then what are the opportunities for this new way to communicate and get to audiences? And I think the people that are thinking too closely about, we're going to make a digital shoe store so you can buy physical shoes, are thinking about it in the wrong way. They should be, we are standing up a digital product line that's going direct to avatar. So it's our brand. People love it. We're going to make new products that only digitally exist. So instead of trying to bring that across, some companies are ready, some companies aren't. So thinking about that, is what is your strategy? And some companies, it's not yet, not there yet. Come back in 5 years. You don't have to be here. You don't have to do it. You don't have to stress out. Others, they're perfect for it. So they should just run full hog and be some of those early adopters to place a stake in the ground and show what could be done. And then with the entertainment space, it is a difficult one. User-generated content is generally really crap. It just is, because most users haven't made anything before or spent the time to try and craft a world or tell a story. If you look at YouTube's tech stack, you think about the thousands or hundreds of thousands of minutes of content that's uploaded, you know, every minute of every day, you only ever see the 1% of the 1% of content coming through. So user-generated content isn't going to be, you know, the great gold rush that a lot of people wanted to do. And in the early days of VR creation or XR creation, because there isn't that many users there at the moment, you get to see everything, warts and all. So when that platform is a really difficult place to play, because you see, well, that isn't very good. Yeah, I know that isn't very good. It's made by a 12-year-old in Kansas. Like, but he's playing, having fun and learning his craft. You know, that's fine. So when some of the more senior people come into it, or some more crafted stories turn up, we're beginning to see a higher quality within the user-generated content space. But the unlock is people have already got stories they're telling in different mediums. So the museum, let's say there's a museum, and every town, every city has a museum. And it's the simplest way. Someone spent a long time crafting a collection of content and crafted a user experience of how do you enter? How do you buy a ticket? Where do you go? What's the audio guide? What is the signage? Like, the physical space is really well designed and it works for n number of humans that come to the physical one. We can now digitally duplicate that and give that digital reach and distribution to the world overnight. And so taking things that we've already spent a lot of time crafting and honing, and that leans back to what we started talking about, how we take filmmakers for their, you know, physical film cameras in the real world and gave them digital cameras in the virtual world. It's still a camera. You still operate it in the same way. It's still the same story you're telling. But now you have this reach and this tool set that can take it far further. I think it's a great way to think about it. What are the mediums that you're already telling good stories in or got good user experience in, whatever they may be? And now let's think about transferring them and bringing them in. Instead of saying, hey, you made museums, now make a rock show in the metaverse. Like, no, that's not what you're good at. You're great at telling this type of story. So let's see how we bring that across.
Mm. Yeah, that's a really helpful way to think about it, because it starts with the stories and the things that you're good at and how can you use this to open up stuff in that realm. It is exactly the way to do it, isn't it? Which comes back to what we were talking about before, rather than getting obsessed with the technology and just doing something that technologically is cool, but do people really want that? Well, that's like a different question, isn't it? And yeah, that's very helpful for sure. We're getting towards the end of the chat, but I wanted to ask, what's getting you most excited now? You've talked about loads of great stuff in there. Maybe we've covered it, but at Magnopus specifically, is there anything you're able to talk about that you're working on at the moment that's getting you excited or looking a few months ahead?
There's so many things we're doing that I can't tell you about. It's really frustrating. In about 2 months' time, we should do this conversation again, and there'll be a whole plethora of new experiences. We're really proud about the way we get to work with studios and tech giants to kind of use their new tech to make these new things. Not only are they, you know, for the new audiences, but they're kind of landmark pieces to push the boundaries. And that's when we set it up. We always get that phone call of, we have something new. Help us create something that really resonates to an audience or has cut through for what our technology does. I think for me personally, I'm kind of, and I've got, I think I mentioned earlier, but I've got these twin boys who are five. I'm really excited about that they are complete digital natives to a world that I'm wrestling with. So I'm wrestling with new technologies and new ways which are disrupting everything we do. Same as you as well. But for them, this is normal. So, you know, I did this presentation to a UK government group recently where I said, well, you know, talking about generative AI. I said, well, here's, you know, my boys, here's their crappy drawing of a train over the weekend being driven by a cat and a top hat, and it's just crayons. And here's a little video of them with voice to text, because they can't even spell or like do letters yet. Daddy, I want to see a steam train being driven by a cat and a top hat. And it rendered the most perfect photoreal, gorgeous steam train at night in the snow. And I said, well, this is the thing. Like, for this next generation, these tools are normal. And for them, the craft is shifted from needing 10,000 hours of learning, of drawing, of composition, of rendering, of compositing. Like, those tools that we needed to do this. Now it's about their imagination. And what do they want to see? And what format they want to create in. We have this huge impact of all these new tools where I believe it's a massive enabler, where it becomes less about the elite and it becomes more about the democratized access of creation. And so all of the generative AI tools are really exciting for us about how it's accelerating the quality of content that's going to be created. And now it's about great ideas more than ever at all. It's about great ideas and what story you want to tell and who do you want to tell it to.
Yeah, that's so cool. And that's like a really positive way to think about this. And when people talk about like exponential change all the time and how fast things are moving, like, that's so interesting that your kids at that age, that's their starting point, is that they can have an idea and then it can be visually there straight away. Like, the fact that they're starting there is so interesting, isn't it? And the kids also will tell you if stuff is good or bad. Like, they have no filter, yeah, which is also a good thing, I think. But yeah, amazing. Yeah, thank you so much. That's such a really like practical, helpful conversation. And encourage people to go and check out Connected Spaces platform as well. Maybe you could just remind people where to go so they can kind of get involved and check it all out.
Yeah, so really appreciate the chat. It's a really exciting time to be around. So just go to magnopus.com. And you can find us on the platform page. It's called Connected Spaces. Like I said, open source. The GitHub is ready to be jumped on as soon as you guys want it. And if there's anything else we can do to help, just reach out at any time.
Awesome. I will leave your links and Magnopus's in the show notes, of course. But Sol, thank you so much. That was awesome.
My pleasure, Luke. Thanks for your time.
Thank you. So there we go. Such a brilliant chat with Sol, as I'm sure you'll agree. I'll leave his links and Magnopus's links in the show notes. Definitely go and follow that team. They are very experienced, and they're not just talking about these things. They have built so many awesome experiences across all of this technology. So all in the show notes. Thank you very much for listening, as always. And I will see you for next week's episode.